I understand, she said, that you're also in favor of Moroi fighting with the Guardians and attacking Strigoi. Another dangerous topic, one Lyssa pushed forward into. I think if there are Moroi who want to, they shouldn't be denied the chance. Jill suddenly popped into my head.
Moroi lives are precious, said the Queen. They shouldn't be risked.
Dampier lives are precious, too, Lyssa countered. If they fight with Moroi, it could save everybody. And again, if Moroi are willing, why deny them? They deserve to know how to defend themselves, and people like Tasha Ozera have developed ways of fighting with magic. The mention of Christian's aunt brought a frown to the Queen's face. Tasha had been attacked by Strigoi when younger and had spent the rest of her life learning to fight back.
Tasha Ozera. She's a troublemaker. She's starting to gather a lot of other troublemakers.
She's trying to introduce new ideas. I noticed then that Lyssa wasn't afraid any longer. She was confident in her beliefs and wanted them expressed. Throughout history, people with new ideas, who think differently and try to change things, have always been called troublemakers. But seriously, do you want the truth? A wry look crossed Tatiana's face, almost a smile.
Always.
We need change. I mean, our traditions are important. We shouldn't give up on those. But sometimes, I think we're misguided.
Misguided?
As time's gone on, we've gone along with other changes. We've evolved. Computers, electricity, technology in general. We all agree those make our lives better. Why can't we be the same in the way we act? Why are we still clinging to the past when there are better ways to do things? Lyssa was breathless, worked up and excited. Her cheeks felt warm and her heart raced. All of us were watching Tatiana, searching for any clue in that stony face.
You're very interesting to talk to, she finally said.
She made interesting sound like a dirty word.
But I have things I must do now.
She stood up, and everyone hastily followed suit, even Adrian.
I won't be joining you for dinner, but you and your companions will have everything you need. I'll see you tomorrow at the trial. No matter how radical and naively idealistic your ideas are, I'm glad you'll be there to complete his sentencing. His imprisonment, at least, is something we can all agree on.
Tatiana swept out, two guardians immediately following. Priscilla followed too, leaving Lyssa and Adrian alone.
Well done, cousin. Aren't many people who can throw the old lady off balance like that.
She didn't seem very off balance.
Oh, she was, believe me. Most of the people she deals with every day wouldn't talk to her like that. Let alone someone your age.
He stood up and extended a hand to Lyssa.
Come on, I'll show you around this place. Take your mind off things.
I've been here before, she said, when I was younger.
Yeah, well, the things we get to see when we're young are different than the things we get to see when we're older. Did you know there's a 24-hour bar in here? We'll get you a drink.
I don't want a drink.
You will before this trip's over.
I left Lyssa's head and returned to my room. The meeting with the Queen was over, and Lyssa didn't need my unseen support. Besides, I didn't really want to hang out with Adrian right now. Sitting up, I discovered I felt surprisingly alert. Being in her head had kind of been like taking a nap. I decided to do a little exploring of my own. I'd never been to the royal court. It really was supposed to be like a mini town, and I wondered what other things there were to see, aside from the bar that Adrian probably lived in while visiting. I headed downstairs, figuring I'd have to go outside. As far as I knew, this building only held guest rooms. It was kind of like the palace's hotel. When I got to the entryway, however, I saw Christian and Eddie standing and talking with someone I couldn't see. Eddie, ever vigilant, saw me and grinned.
Hey, Rose, look who we found.
As I approached, Christian stepped aside, revealing the mystery person. I came to a halt, and she grinned at me. Hi, Rose. A moment later, I felt a smile slowly creep over my face. Hello, Maya. Chapter 12. If you'd asked me 6 months ago, I would have said that there was no way I'd be happy to run into Maya Rinaldi at the royal court. She was a year younger than me and had held a grudge against Lissa since freshman year. A grudge so big that Maya had gone to great extremes to make life miserable for us. She'd done a good job. Jesse and Ralph's rumors about me had been a result of her efforts. But then Maya had gone with us to Spokane and had been captured by the Strigoi. Just like for Christian and Eddie, that had changed everything. She'd seen the same horrors the rest of us had. In fact, she was the only one of my friends who had witnessed Mason's death and me killing Strigoi. She had even saved my life then by using her water magic to temporarily drown one of the Strigoi. In the great Moroi argument about whether or not they should learn to fight with the Guardians, she was firmly on the fighting side. I hadn't seen Maya in almost a month, ever since Mason's funeral. In studying her, I felt like it'd been a year. I had always thought Maya looked like a doll. She was short compared to most Moroi and had young, round-cheeked features. The fact that she'd always curled her hair in perfect ringlets had sort of reinforced that image. But today, she hadn't gone to nearly that much trouble. Her golden blonde hair was pulled into a ponytail, its only curl coming from a slight natural waviness. She wore no makeup, and her face showed signs of having been outdoors a lot. Her skin looked chapped from the wind, and she had a very, very faint tan, almost unheard of for Moroi, with their aversion to sunlight. For the first time ever, she actually looked her age. She laughed at my shock. Come on, it hasn't been that long. You look like you don't even recognize me. I almost don't. We hugged, and again, it was hard to believe that she'd once plotted ways to ruin my life, or that I'd broken her nose. What are you doing here? She beckoned us out the door. We were just about to leave. I'll explain everything. We went to a neighboring building. It wasn't like a mall or anything, but it did have a few businesses that the Moroi who worked and visited here needed. A handful of restaurants, some small stores, and offices that offered all sorts of services. There was also a coffee shop, and that was where Maya led us. A coffee shop seems like an ordinary thing, but I rarely got to go to them. Sitting in a public place, or semi-public, with friends not worrying about school, it was great. It reminded me of when Lissa and I had been on our own, when our entire lives hadn't been contained within a school and its rules. My dad works here now, she told us, and so now I live here. Moroi children rarely lived with their parents. They were sent off to places like St. Vladimir's, where they could grow up safely. What about school? I asked. There aren't many kids here, but there are some. Most of them are rich and have personal tutors. My dad pulled some strings and set it up so that I can go to them for different subjects. So I'm still studying the same things, just in a different way. It's actually pretty cool. Less teacher time, but more homework. You've been doing more than that, said Eddie, unless your classes are outside. He'd noticed the same things I had, and in looking at her hands as they held her latte, I could now see calluses. She wiggled her fingers. I made friends with some of the guardians here. They've been showing me a few things. That's risky, said Christian, though he sounded like he approved. Since there's still a debate about Moroi fighting. You mean about Moroi fighting with magic, she corrected. That's what's controversial. No one's really talking about Moroi fighting hand to hand. Well, they are, I said. It's just been overshadowed by the magic controversy. It's not illegal, she said primly. And until it is, I'm going to keep doing it. You think with all the events and meetings that go on around here that anyone even notices what someone like me does? Maya's family, in addition to being non-royal, was also pretty lower class. Not that there was anything wrong with that, but she had to feel the effects of that around here. Still, I found her whole situation cheering. Maya seemed happier and more open than she had been during the entire time I'd known her. She seemed free. Christian spoke my thoughts before I could.
"You've changed," he said.
"We've all changed," she corrected.
"Especially you, Rose. I can't quite explain it."
"I don't think there's any way the five of us couldn't have changed," Christian pointed out.
A moment later, he corrected himself.
"Four of us."
We all fell silent, thoughts of Mason weighing us down. Being with Christian, Eddie, and Maya stirred up that grief I always tried to hide, and I could see from their faces that they continually fought the same battle. Conversation eventually turned toward all of us catching up on what had happened here and at the academy. Yet I kept thinking about how Maya had said that I had changed more than the others. All I could think about was how out of control I'd felt lately, how half the time my actions and feelings didn't seem like my own. Sitting there, it almost seemed like Maya was controlled by all of her positive traits now, and I was controlled by my negative ones. Conversations with Adrian replayed through my head, reminding me about how I supposedly had such a dark, dark aura. Maybe thinking about him summoned him, but he and Lissa eventually joined us. Their bar was probably in the same building, I realized. I'd been blocking her out and not paying much attention. Adrian hadn't completely gotten her drunk, thankfully, but she'd agreed to two drinks. I could feel a slight buzz through the bond and had to carefully shield it out. She was as surprised as we'd been to see Maya, but gave her a warm welcome and wanted to catch up. I'd heard most of this already, so I just listened and drank my chai. No coffee for me. Most guardians drank it the way Maroi drank blood, but I wouldn't touch the stuff.
"How'd your thing with the queen go?"
Christian asked Lissa at one point. "Not so bad," she said. "I mean, not great either, but she didn't yell at me or humiliate me, so that's a start."
"Stop being modest," said Adrian, putting his arm around her. "Princess Dragomir totally stood her ground. You should have seen it."
Lissa laughed.
"I don't suppose she mentioned why she decided to let us come to the trial?"
Christian asked stiffly. He didn't look very happy about the bonding that was taking place here, or about Adrian's arm. Lissa's laughter faded, but she was still smiling. "Adrian did it."
"What?"
Christian and I asked together. Adrian looked very pleased with himself, stayed quiet for a change, and let Lissa do the talking. "He convinced her that we needed to be here. He apparently harassed her until she gave in."
"It's called persuasion, not harassment," Adrian said.
Lissa laughed again. My own words about the queen came back to haunt me. Who's she? Just another Ivashkov? There are a ton of them. There were, indeed. I eyed Adrian. "How closely are you guys related?" The answer popped into my head from Lissa's. "She's your aunt."
"Great aunt. And I'm her favorite great-nephew. Well, I'm her only great-nephew. But that's not important.
I'd still be her favorite," he said.
"Unbelievable," said Christian.
"I'll second that," I said.
"None of you appreciate me. Why is it so hard to believe that I could make a real contribution in these dark times?"
Adrian stood up. He was trying to sound outraged, but the smirk on his face indicated that he still found all of this pretty funny.
"My cigarettes and I are going outside. At least they show me respect."
As soon as he left, Christian asked Lissa,
"Were you getting drunk with him?"
"I'm not drunk. I only had two drinks," she said. "Since when did you get all conservative?"
"Since Adrian became a bad influence."
"Come on. He helped us get here. No one else was able to do it. He didn't have to, but he did. And you and Rose are sitting there, still acting like he's the most evil person on the planet. That wasn't exactly true. I was mostly sitting there like I'd been hit in the head, still too dumbstruck to react.
Yeah, and I'm sure he did it out of the kindness of his heart, muttered Christian.
Why else would he do it?
Oh, gee, I wonder.
Lissa's eyes widened. You think he did it for me? You think there's something going on with us?
You guys drink together, practice magic together, and go to elitist events together? What would you think?
Maya and Eddie looked like they wanted to be somewhere else. I was starting to share the feeling. Anger burned through Lissa, hitting me like a wave of heat. She was utterly outraged. Her fury didn't even have that much to do with Adrian, really. She was more upset at the thought of Christian not trusting her. And as for him, I needed no psychic powers to understand how he was feeling. He wasn't jealous simply because she was hanging out with Adrian. Christian was still jealous that Adrian had the kind of influence to pull this off for her. It was just like what Jesse and Ralph had described, about how the right connections could open the right doors, connections that Christian didn't have. I need Christian's leg, hoping he'd get the hint that he really should stop talking before things got worse. Lissa's anger was intensifying, muddled with embarrassment as she began to doubt herself and wonder if she had been getting too close to Adrian. The whole thing was ridiculous. Christian, for the love of God, if Adrian did this for anyone, it was because of me and his crazy obsession. He bragged a while ago that he could do it, and I didn't believe it. I turned to Lissa. I needed to get her calm and diffuse those dark feelings that could cause so much trouble for her when they ran out of control. Liss, you might not be wasted exactly, but you need to chill out for an hour before having this conversation. You're going to say something as stupid as Christian, and I'll be the one who has to deal with the mess, like always. I'd gotten worked up and expected someone to tell me how bitchy I sounded. Instead, Lissa relaxed and offered Christian a smile. Yeah, we should definitely talk about this later. A lot's kind of happened today.
He hesitated, then nodded. Yeah, sorry I jumped all over you.
He returned her smile, fight patched up. So?
Lissa asked Maya.
Who have you met here?
I stared at them in amazement, but no one seemed to notice. I'd fixed their fight, and there'd been no acknowledgement. No, thank you, Rose, for pointing out how idiotic we're being.
It was bad enough I had to endure their romance day after day, with no consideration for how I felt. Now I was salvaging their relationship, and they didn't even realize it.
I'll be right back, I said, interrupting Maya's description of some of the other teenagers here. I was afraid if I sat there, I was going to say something I'd regret, or maybe break a chair. Where had all this rage come from? I went outside, hoping a gulp of cold air would calm me down. Instead, I got a face full of clove smoke.
Don't start in about the smoking, warned Adrian.
He was leaning against the building's brick wall.
You didn't have to come outside. You knew I was here.
That's actually why I'm here. Well, that and I felt like I was going to go crazy if I stayed inside another minute. He tilted his head to look at my face. His eyebrows shot up.
You aren't kidding, are you? What happened? You were fine a few minutes ago.
I paced across the ground in front of him.
I don't know. I was fine. Then Christian and Lissa started having this stupid argument over you. It was weird. They were the ones who were mad, and then I ended up madder than both of them.
Wait, they were arguing over me?
Yes, I just said that. Weren't you paying attention?
Hey, don't snap at me. I haven't done anything to you.
I crossed my arms over my chest. Christian's jealous because you hang around Lissa so much.
We're studying spirit, said Adrian. He's welcome to join in.
Yeah, well, no one ever said love was reasonable. Seeing you come back together kind of set him off, and then he got upset because you pulled rank with the queen for Lissa.
I didn't do it for her. I did it all for you. But, well, You especially.
I came to a halt in front of him. I didn't believe you, that you could do it. He grinned.
Guess you should have listened to my family history in that dream after all.
I guess. I just thought... I couldn't finish. I'd thought Dimitri would be the one who came through for me. The one who, despite what he said, could make almost anything happen. But he hadn't.
Thought what?
Adrian prompted. Nothing. With much effort, I managed to utter the next words. Thank you for helping us.
Oh, my God, he said. A kind word from Rose Hathaway. I can die a happy man.
What are you saying, that I'm normally an ungrateful bitch?
He just looked at me. Hey, not cool. Maybe you could redeem yourself with a hug.
I glared.
A small one, he begged.
With a sigh, I walked over and put one arm around Adrian, leaning my head lightly against his arm. Thanks, Adrian. We stood like that for a heartbeat. I felt none of the crazy electricity or connection I did with Dimitri, but I had to admit that Lissa had been right about something. Adrian was annoying and arrogant at times, but he really wasn't the bastard I often made him out to be. The doors opened, and Lissa and the others stepped outside. They understandably looked surprised, but I didn't care just then. Besides, they probably all thought I was pregnant with Adrian's love child, so what did it matter? I backed away.
Heading out? I asked.
Yeah. Maya's got more important things to do than hang out with us, joked Christian.
Hey, I just told my dad I'd meet him. I'll see you guys before I leave.
She started to walk away, then abruptly turned around.
God, I'm so out of it.
She reached into her coat pocket and handed me a folded piece of paper.
This is half the reason I found you guys. One of the court clerks wanted me to give this to you.
Thanks, I said, puzzled. She headed off to see her dad while the rest of us strolled back to our accommodations. I slowed my pace and opened the note, wondering who in the world here would want to contact me.
Rose.
I was so happy to hear about your arrival. I'm sure it'll make tomorrow's proceedings that much more entertaining. I've been curious for quite some time about how Vasilisa is doing, and your romantic escapades are always an amusing diversion. I can't wait to share them in the courtroom tomorrow. Best, V.D.
Who's it from? Asked Eddie, coming up beside me.
I hastily folded it up and shoved it into my pocket.
No one,
I replied. No one, indeed. V.D. Victor Dashkov. Chapter 13. When we got back to our rooms, I made up an excuse to Lissa about how I needed to take care of some guardian stuff. She was eager to patch up the earlier conflict with Christian, probably in the form of clothing removal, and I didn't ask any questions. There was a phone in my room, and after calling an operator, I was able to find out which room was Dimitri's. He was surprised to see me at his door, and a little wary. The last time this had happened, I'd been under the influence of Victor's lust charm and had behaved aggressively. I have to talk to you, I said. He let me come in, and I immediately handed over the note. V.D.
Yeah, I know, said Dimitri.
He handed the note back.
Victor Dashkov.
What are we going to do? I mean, we talked about this, but now he really is saying he's going to sell us out.
Dimitri didn't answer, and I could tell he was assessing every angle of this, just like he would a fight.
Finally, he pulled out his cell phone, which was a lot cooler than having to rely on the room's phone.
Give me a moment.
I started to sit on his bed, decided that was dangerous, and instead sat on the couch. I didn't know who he was calling, but the conversation took place in Russian. What's going on? I asked when he finished.
I'll let you know soon. For now,
We have to wait.
Great. My favorite thing to do. He dragged an armchair up and sat opposite me. It seemed too small for someone as tall as him, but, as always, he managed to make it work and appear graceful in the process. Beside me was one of the Western novels he always carried around. I picked it up, again thinking about how alone he was. Even now, at the court, he'd chosen to stay in his room. Why do you read these?
Some people read books for fun, he observed.
Hey, watch the dig, and I do read books. I read them to solve mysteries that threaten my best friend's life and sanity. I don't think reading this cowboy stuff is really saving the world like I do.
He took it from me and flipped it over, face thoughtful and not as intense as usual. Like any book, it's an escape, and there's something, I don't know, something appealing about the Old West. No rules. Everyone just lives by their own code. You don't have to be tied down by others' ideas of right and wrong in order to bring justice.
Wait, I laughed. I thought I was the only one who wanted to break rules.
I didn't say I wanted to, just that I can see the appeal.
You can't fool me, comrade. You want to put on a cowboy hat and keep lawless bank robbers in line.
No time. I have enough trouble keeping you in line.
I grinned, and suddenly, it was a lot like when we cleaned the church, before the fight at least. Easy, comfortable. In fact, it was a lot like the old days when we'd first begun training together, way back before everything had gotten so complicated.
Well, okay, things had always been complicated, but for a while they'd been less complicated.
It made me sad. I wished we could relive those early days. There'd been no Viktor Dashkov, no blood on my hands.
I'm sorry, Dmitri said all of a sudden. For what, reading cheesy novels?
For not being able to get you here. I feel like I let you down.
I glimpsed a shadow of worry on his face, like he was concerned he might have caused some irreparable damage. The apology totally caught me off guard. For a moment, I wondered if he was jealous of Adrian's influence in the same way Christian had been. Then I realized it was completely different. I'd been giving Dmitri a hard time because I'd been convinced he could do anything. Somewhere, deep inside, he felt the same, at least where I was concerned. He didn't want to deny me anything. My earlier bad mood had long since vanished, and I suddenly just felt drained and stupid.
You didn't, I told him. I acted like a total brat. You've never let me down before. You didn't let me down with this.
The grateful look he gave me made me feel as if I had wings. If another moment had passed, I suspected he would have said something so sweet that I would have flown away. Instead, his phone rang. Another conversation in Russian took place, and then he stood up.
All right, let's go.
Where?
To see Viktor Dashkov.
It turned out that Dmitri had a friend who had a friend, and somehow, despite the best security in the Moroi world, we managed to get into the court's prison facilities.
Why are we doing this? I whispered as we walked down the hall toward Victor's cell.
I'd really, really hoped for stone walls and torches, but the place looked very modern and efficient, with marble floors and stark white walls. At least there were no windows.
You think we can talk him out of it?
Dmitri shook his head.
If Viktor wanted to take revenge on us, he'd do it without any warning. He doesn't do things without reason.
The fact that he told you first means he wants something, and now we're going to find out what it is.
We reached Viktor's cell. He was the only prisoner currently being held. Like the rest of the facility, his room reminded me of something you'd find at a hospital. Everything was clean, bright, and sterile, and very bare. It was a place without any sort of stimulus or distraction whatsoever, which would have driven me crazy in 1 hour. The cell had silvery bars that looked very hard to break, which was the most important part. Viktor sat in a chair, idly examining his nails. It had been 3 months since our last meeting, and seeing him again made my skin crawl. Feelings I hadn't known were buried in me suddenly burst to the surface. One of the hardest things of all was seeing him look so healthy and strong. He'd bought that health by torturing Lyssa, and I hated him for it. If his disease had run its normal course, he might be dead by now. He had receding black hair, with only the slightest touch of silver. He was in his 40s and had a regal, almost handsome cut to his face. He glanced up at our approach. Eyes the same pale jade as Lyssa's met mine. The Dragomir and Dashkov families had a lot of intertwined history, and it was creepy seeing that eye color in someone else. A smile lit his face.
Oh my, this is a treat. Lovely Rosemary, practically an adult now.
His eyes flicked toward Dimitri.
Of course. Some have been treating you that way for quite a while.
I pressed my face to the bars. Stop screwing with us, you son of a bitch. What do you want?
Dimitri put a gentle hand on my shoulder and pulled me back. Easy, Rose.
I took a deep breath and then slowly stepped backward. Victor straightened up in his chair and laughed.
After all this time, your cub still hasn't learned any control.
But then, maybe you never really wanted her to.
We aren't here to banter, said Dimitri calmly. You wanted to lure Rose over, and now we need to know why.
Does there have to be some sinister reason? I just wanted to know how she was doing, and something tells me we aren't going to have a chance for any friendly chats tomorrow.
That annoying smirk stayed on his face, and I decided that he was lucky to be behind bars and out of my reach.
We're not going to have a friendly chat now, I growled.
You think I'm joking, but I'm not. I really do want to know how you're doing. You've always been a fascinating subject to me, Rosemary. The only shadow-kissed person we know of. I told you before, that isn't the kind of thing you walk away from unscathed. There's no way you can quietly sink into the regimented routine of academic life. People like you aren't meant to blend in.
I'm not some kind of science experiment.
He acted like I hadn't said anything.
What's it been like? What have you noticed?
There's no time for this, if you don't get to the point, warned Dimitri. We're going to leave.
I didn't understand how Dimitri could sound so calm. I leaned forward and gave Victor my coldest smile. There's no way they'll let you off tomorrow. I hope you enjoy prison. I bet it'll be great once you get sick again. And you will, you know.
Victor regarded me levelly, still with that amused look that made me want to choke him.
All things die, Rose. Well, except for you, I suppose. Or maybe you are dead. I don't know.
Those who visit the world of the dead can probably never fully shake their connection to it.
There was a snarky retort on my lips, but something held me back. Those who visit the world of the dead. What if my Mason sightings weren't because I was crazy, or because he was seeking revenge? What if there was something about me, something that had happened when I died and come back, that was now connecting me to Mason? It was Victor who had first explained what it meant to be shadow-kissed. I wondered now if he had any of the answers I'd been looking for. My face must have given away something, because Victor gave me a speculative look.
Yes? There's something you'd like to say?
I hated to ask him for anything. It made my stomach turn. Swallowing my pride, I asked, What is the world of the dead? Is it heaven or hell?
Neither, he said.
What lives there? I exclaimed. Ghosts? Will I go back? Do things come out of it? Victor was taking great pleasure in me having to come to him for information, just as I'd feared he would. I saw that smirk intensify.
Well, clearly some things come out of it, because here you stand before us.
He's baiting you, said Dimitri. Let it go.
Victor gave Dimitri a brief glare.
I'm helping,
her.
He turned back to me. Honestly, I don't know that much about it. You're the one that has been there, Rose, not me. Not yet. Someday, you'll probably be the one educating me. I'm sure the more you deal death out, the closer you'll become to it.
Enough, said Dimitri, voice harsh. We're going.
Wait, said Victor, voice congenial. You haven't told me about Vasilisa yet. I moved forward again.
Stay away from her. She doesn't have anything to do with this.
Victor gave me a dry look.
Seeing as I'm locked away here, I have no choice but to stay away from her, my dear.
And you're wrong. Vasilisa has everything to do with everything.
That's it, I said, suddenly getting it. That's why you sent the note. You wanted me here because you wanted to know about her, and you knew there was no way she'd come talk to you herself. You had nothing to blackmail her with.
Blackmail's an ugly word.
There's no way you're going to see her, at least outside of the courtroom. She's never going to heal you. I told you. You're going to get sick again, and you're going to die. You're going to be the one sending me postcards from the other side.
You think that's what this is about? You think my needs are that petty?
The mockery was gone, replaced by a feverish and almost fanatical look in his green eyes. The tight set of his mouth stretched the skin of his face a little, and I noticed he'd lost weight since our last encounter. Maybe prison had been harder on him than I thought.
You've forgotten everything. Why I did what I did. You've been so caught up in your own short-sightedness that you've missed the big picture I was looking at.
I racked my brain, thinking back to that time last fall. He was right. My focus had been on the wrongs he'd committed against Lyssa and me personally. I'd forgotten other conversations, his insane explanations of his grand scheme. You wanted to stage a revolution. Still want to.
That's crazy. It's not going to happen, I said.
It's already happening.
Do you think I don't know what's going on out in the world?
I still have contacts. People can be bought off. How do you think I was able to send that message?
I know about the unrest.
I know about Natasha Ozera's movement to get Maroi to fight with Guardians. You stand by her and vilify me, Rosemary. But I pushed for the very same thing last fall, yet somehow you don't seem to regard her in the same way.
Tasha Ozera is working on her cause a bit differently than you did, noted Dimitri.
And that's why she's getting nowhere, Victor retorted. Tatiana and her council are being held back by centuries of archaic traditions. So long as that sort of power rules us, nothing will change. We will never learn to fight. Non-royal Maroi will never have a voice. Dampirs like you will continually be sent out to battle.
It's what we dedicate our lives to, said Dimitri.
I could sense the tension building in him. He might show better self-control than me, but I knew he was getting just as frustrated here.
And it's what you lose your lives for. You're all but enslaved and don't even realize it.
And for what?
Why do you protect us?
Because we need you, I faltered. For our race to survive.
You don't need to throw yourselves into battle for that. Making children isn't really that difficult.
I ignored his quip. And because the Maroi and their magic are important. They can do amazing things.
Victor threw his hands up in exasperation.
We used to do amazing things. Humans used to revere us as gods, but over time, we grew lazy. The advent of technology made our magic more and more obsolete. Now, all we do is parlor tricks.
If you have so many ideas, said Dimitri, with a dangerous glint in his dark eyes,
then do something useful in prison and write a manifesto.
And what's this have to do with Lyssa anyway? I asked.
because Vasilisa is a vehicle for change.
I stared incredulously. You think she's going to lead your revolution?
Well, I'd prefer that I lead it, someday. But regardless, I think that she's going to be a part of it. I've heard about her, too. She's a rising star. Still young, certainly. But people are taking notice. All royals aren't created equally, you know. The Dragomir symbol is a dragon, the king of beasts. Likewise, the Dragomir blood has always been powerful. That's why the Strigoi have targeted them so consistently. A Dragomir returning to power is no small thing, particularly one such as her. My impression from the reports is that she must have mastered her magic. If that's so, with her gifts, there's no telling what she could do. People are drawn to her with almost no effort on her part. And when she actually tries to influence them, well, they'll do anything she wants.
His eyes were wide as he spoke, wonder and happiness on his face as he imagined Lyssa living out his dreams. Unbelievable, I said. First, you wanted to hide her away to keep you alive. Now you actually want her out in the world to use her compulsion for your own psycho plans?
I told you. She's a force for change. And like you being shadow-kissed, she's the only one of her kind that we know about. That makes her dangerous. And very valuable.
Well, that was something. Victor wasn't all-knowing after all. He didn't know about Adrian's spirit use. Lyssa will never do it, I said. She's not going to abuse her powers.
And Victor's not going to say anything about us, said Dimitri, tugging my arm. He's achieved his goal. He brought you here because he wanted to know about Lyssa.
He didn't find much out, I said.
You'd be surprised, said Victor.
He grinned at Dimitri.
And what makes you so certain I won't enlighten the world about your romantic indiscretions?
Because it won't save you from prison. And if you ruin Rose, you'll destroy whatever weak chance you had of Lyssa helping you with your warped fantasy.
Victor flinched just a little. Dimitri was right. Dimitri stepped forward, pressing close to the bars as I had earlier. I'd thought I had a scary voice, but when he spoke his next words, I realized I wasn't even close.
And it'll all be pointless anyway, because you won't stay alive long enough in prison to stage your grand plans. You aren't the only one with connections.
My breath caught a little. Dimitri brought so many things to my life. Love, comfort, and instruction. I got so used to him sometimes that I forgot just how dangerous he could be. As he stood there, tall and threatening while he glared down at Victor, I felt a chill run down my spine. I remembered how when I had first come to the academy, people had said Dimitri was a god. In this moment, he looked it. If Victor was frightened by Dimitri's threat, he didn't show it. His jade green eyes glanced between the two of us.
You two are a match made in heaven. Or somewhere.
See you in court, I said. Dimitri and I left. On our way out, he said a few words in Russian to the guardian on duty. From their manners, my guess was Dimitri was offering thanks. We ventured outdoors, walking across a wide, beautiful park-like space to get back to our rooms. The sleet had stopped, and it had left everything, buildings and trees alike, coated in ice. It was like the world was made of glass. Glancing at Dimitri, I saw him staring straight ahead. It was hard to tell while walking, but I could have sworn he was shaking.
"Are you okay?" I asked.
"Yes."
"You sure?"
"As okay as I can be."
"Do you think he'll tell everyone about us?"
"No."
We walked in silence for a bit. I finally asked the question I'd been dying to know.
"Did you mean it? That if Victor did tell, that you'd..."
I couldn't finish. I couldn't bring myself to say the words, "have him killed."
"I don't have much influence in the upper levels of Moroi royalty,"
but I have plenty among the guardians who handle the dirty work in our world.
You didn't answer the question. If you'd really do it.
I do a lot of things to protect you, Rosa.
My heart pounded. He only used Rosa when he was feeling particularly affectionate toward me. It wouldn't exactly be protecting me. It'd be after the fact, cold-blooded. You don't do that kind of thing, I told him. Revenge is more my thing. I'll have to kill him. I meant it as a joke, but he didn't think it was funny.
Don't talk like that, and anyway, it doesn't matter. Victor's not going to say anything.
He left me to go to his own room when we got inside. As I was opening the door to mine, Lissa rounded the hall corner.
There you are. What happened? You missed dinner.
I'd completely forgotten. Sorry, got carried away with some guardian stuff. A long story. She'd changed for dinner. Her hair was still pulled up, and she now wore a form-fitting dress made out of silver raw silk. She looked beautiful. She looked royal. I thought about Victor's words and wondered if she really could be the power for change he swore she was. Looking like she did now, so glamorous and self-composed, I could imagine people following her anywhere. I certainly would, but then I was biased.
"Why are you looking at me like that?"
she asked with a small smile. I couldn't tell her that I'd just seen the man who frightened her the most. I couldn't tell her that while she'd been out living it up, I'd been off watching her back in the shadows, like I always do. Instead, I returned her smile. I like the dress. Chapter 14. About a half hour before my alarm was scheduled to go off the next morning, I heard a knock at my door. I expected it to be Lissa, but a sleepy check of our bond showed that she was still fast asleep. Puzzled, I staggered out of the bed and opened the door. A Moroi girl I didn't recognize handed me some folded clothes with a note attached. I wondered if I should tip her or something, but she left too quickly for me to react. I sat back on my bed and unfolded the clothing. Black slacks, white blouse, and a black jacket. It was the same ensemble that the other guardians wore around here, and it was in my size. Wow! I was about to become part of the team. A slow grin spread over my face, and I opened the note. It was in Dimitri's writing. Wear your hair up. The grin stayed on my face. A lot of female guardians cut their hair to show off their Molnia marks. I'd reluctantly considered it once, and Dimitri had told me not to. He loved my hair and had told me to wear it up. The way he'd said it back then had given me chills, just like now. An hour later, I was on my way to the trial with Lissa, Christian, and Eddie. Someone had rustled up a black and white outfit for Eddie, too, and I think we both kind of felt like kids playing dress-up with their parents' clothing. My cropped jacket and stretchy blouse were actually pretty cute, and I wondered if I'd be able to bring these back with me. The courtroom was over in the large, ornate building we'd passed upon arrival. Walking through its halls, I saw a mix of the old and the new. Outside, it was all arched windows and stone spires. Inside, it was a hub of modern activity. People worked in offices with flat-screen monitors. Elevators led to upper floors. Yet, despite that, a few antique touches could still be found. Sculptures on pedestals, chandeliers in the halls. The courtroom itself had beautiful murals that stretched from floor to ceiling, and in front of the room, seals from all the royal families hung on the walls. Lissa stopped as we walked in, her eyes falling on the Dragomir dragon, king of the beasts. A sea of conflicting emotions swirled within her as she stared at the seal, and felt the full weight of being the only one left to carry on her name. Pride to be part of that family. Fear that she wouldn't be good enough to live up to the name. Giving her a gentle nudge, I urged her on toward our seats. The seating was split by an aisle down the middle of the room. We sat at the front of the right-hand section. There were still several minutes to go before proceedings began, but the room wasn't very full yet. I suspected that wouldn't change due to the secrecy surrounding what had happened with Victor. A judge sat at the front, but there was no jury. An elevated seat on one side of the room marked where the queen would sit when she arrived. She would be the one who made the ultimate decision. That was how it worked with royal criminal cases. I pointed it out to Lyssa. Let's hope that she's against him. Looks like she'll be the only one making the decision. Lyssa frowned. Not having a jury feels kind of weird. That's because we spend so much time around humans. She smiled. Maybe. I don't know. Just seems like there's a lot of room for corruption. Well, yeah. This is Victor we're talking about. Moments later, Prince Victor Dashkov himself entered the courtroom. Or rather, just Victor Dashkov did. He'd been stripped of his title when he'd been imprisoned. It had gone to the next oldest person in the Dashkov family. Fear shot through Lyssa, and the little color that was in her cheeks completely disappeared. Mingled with that fear was an emotion I hadn't expected. Regret. Before he'd kidnapped her, Victor had been like an uncle to her. That was even how she'd referred to him. She'd loved him, and he'd betrayed her. I put my hand over hers. Easy, I murmured. It's going to be okay. His eyes, narrowed and cunning, looked around the courtroom as though it were a party. He had that same unconcerned look he'd had while talking to Dimitri and me. I felt my lips curl into a sneer. A red haze tinged my vision, and I worked hard to be as serene as the other guardians in the room. He finally focused on Lyssa, and she flinched at seeing the same eye color she and others of her family had. When he nodded a sort of greeting to her, I felt my control snap. Before I could actually do anything, I felt new words in my mind. Lyssa's. Breathe, Rose. Just breathe. It looked like we were going to have to rely on each other to get through this. A heartbeat later, Victor was walking again, off to take his seat on the left side of the room. Thanks, I said to her once he was gone. It's like you could read my mind. No, she said gently. I could just feel your hand. I looked down at where I'd put my hand over hers. I'd done it to comfort her, and had ended up clenching her fingers in my own agitation. Yikes, I said, jerking away and hoping I hadn't broken her bones. Sorry. Queen Tatiana's entrance followed his, which distracted me and helped calm my dark feelings. We all stood when she appeared and then knelt. It was all kind of archaic, but it was a custom the Moroi had held on to over the years. We didn't rise until she took her seat, and then the rest of us were able to sit too. The trial started. One by one, those who had witnessed the events of Victor gave their account of what they'd seen. Largely, this involved the guardians who had pursued Lyssa when Victor had taken her away and who had subsequently been part of the raid on Victor's hideout. Dimitri was the last of the guardians to go. On the surface, his testimony wasn't much different than theirs. They'd all been part of the rescue squad. But his part in the story had begun a little earlier.
I was with my student, Rose Hathaway, he said. She shares a bond with the princess, and was the first to sense what had happened.
Victor's lawyer, I couldn't even imagine how they'd gotten anyone to represent him, glanced at some papers and then looked back up at Dimitri.
Based on the events, it sounds like there was a delay between when she discovered that and when you alerted the others.
Dimitri nodded, his mask of composure never slipping.
She couldn't act on it because Mr. Dashkov had inflicted a charm on her. One that caused her to attack me.
He spoke the words so levelly, it amazed me. Not even the lawyer seemed to notice anything. Only I could see. Or maybe it was just because I knew him. How much it hurt for Dimitri to lie. Oh, he wanted to protect us. Wanted to protect me in particular. Which was why he was doing this. but it killed a piece of him to stand up there under oath and lie. Dimitri was not perfect, no matter how much I thought he was some days, but he always tried to be truthful. Today he couldn't be.
Mr. Dashkov works with earth magic, and some who use that power and are strong in compulsion can influence our base instincts,
continued Dimitri.
In this case, he affected her anger and violence through an object.
Off to my left, I heard a sound, like someone choking on their own laughter. The judge, an elderly but fierce Maroi woman, glared.
Mr. Dashkov, please respect the decorum of this courtroom.
Victor, still smiling, waved his hands in apology.
I'm terribly sorry, Your Honor, and Your Majesty. Something in Guardian Belikov's testimony just tickled my fancy, that's all. It won't happen again.
I held my breath, waiting for the blow to fall. It didn't. Dimitri finished his statement, and then Christian was called up. His part was short. He'd been with Lyssa when she'd been taken and had been knocked out. His contribution was being able to ID some of Victor's guardians as the kidnappers. Once Christian sat down, it was my turn. I walked up, hoping I looked calm in front of all those eyes, and in front of Victor. In fact, I went out of my way not to look at him at all. As I said my name and gave my oath to tell the truth, I suddenly felt the full force of what Dimitri must have experienced. I was standing before all these people, swearing to be honest. But I would lie in an instant if the lust charm came up. My version was pretty straightforward. I had details to offer from before the night of the kidnapping, like about when Victor had laid his sick traps to test Lyssa's power. Otherwise, my story lined up with Dimitri's and the other guardians. I'd said before that I could lie well, and I brushed over the attack charm part with such ease that no one paid any attention, except Victor. Despite my refusal to look at him, I inadvertently glanced in his direction when I mentioned the charm. His eyes bored into me, and a small smirk sat on his lips. His smugness, I realized, was more than just because he knew I was lying. It was also because he actually knew the precise truth. And the look he gave me told me that he had that power over me and Dimitri, the power to ruin everything for us in front of all these people, no matter what Dimitri had threatened. All the while, I kept my face calm enough to make Dimitri proud, but inside my chest my heart thudded loudly. It seemed to last forever, but I knew I was only on the stand for a few minutes. I finished, sagging with relief that Victor hadn't called me out, and then it was Lyssa's turn. As the victim, she offered the first new perspective thus far, and everyone there grew caught up in her story. It was compelling. No one had ever heard anything like it. I also realized that without even trying, Lyssa was using her spirit-induced charisma. I think it came from the same place compulsion did. People were enraptured and sympathetic. When Lyssa described the torture Victor had put her through to force her to heal him, I saw faces go pale with shock. Even Tatiana's stern mask faltered a little. Though whether she felt pity or just simple surprise, I couldn't say. The most amazing thing, though, was how calmly Lyssa managed to deliver the story. On the outside, she was steady and beautiful. But as she spoke the words, describing exactly how Victor's henchmen had tortured her, she relived the pain and terror of that night. The guy had been an air user, and he toyed with that element, sometimes taking it away so she couldn't breathe, and at other times smothering her with it. It had been horrible, and I'd experienced it right along with her. In fact, I experienced it with her again now, as she spoke about the events on the stand. Each painful detail was still etched in her mind, the pain echoing back to both of us. We were both relieved when her testimony finished. Finally, it was Victor's turn. From the look on his face, you never would have guessed he was on trial. He wasn't angry or outraged. He wasn't contrite. He didn't plead. He looked like we were all hanging out somewhere,
like he had nothing in the world to worry about. Somehow,